Good morning. This is a reading from John, the 11th chapter, the 17th through 45th verses. Actually, we'll probably stop a little before that. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." And Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." But Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live, and everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." "Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, there is already a stench because he has been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go."
Thank you, Mark. So first, before I begin, a word of commentary. John's gospel uses the word "the Jews" in a way that's often difficult and has been used to support anti-Semitism. Often it seems to refer to the Jewish leaders who were in opposition to Jesus. In this case, it seems like it just means everybody, but everybody was Jewish, including Mary, Martha, Lazarus, Jesus, and his disciples. So perhaps simply to say the Jewish people of Jerusalem, or just the people, were there commenting and seeing what happened. Last fall, we as a church began a conversation about death and dying and how we can support each other more and as we move toward and through those times with people we love and ourselves. Last week, Reggie Carpenter reopened that conversation as we began a 3-part series we've been calling, she titled, "Walking Each Other Home." And we had some very deep conversation with some probing questions she brought to share with us. Today after worship, Edie Regan will talk about dying on hospice, and Wednesday night, Tim Dean will talk about issues around dying in the hospital. All important information, all stuff for us to consider and learn from together. As Meg said, someone she knows died this week and they don't know where the will or if there's a will. So as a part of this series, we decided that I would preach today around this topic. And given our freedom and the way we do it, I've played around with the lectionary readings and took next week's gospel reading and used it today, what Mark has just read, because it seems so appropriate. The death of Lazarus and Jesus raising him from the dead. There is a lot here, and I'm not going to begin to get into all of it. I have an assignment, a focus. But Jesus, in this passage, we see, chose to go to Mary and Martha and Lazarus' home in Bethany after he had word that Lazarus was sick, although he waited 2 days before he went. Even though it was right outside Jerusalem, and Jesus knew his life would be in danger to go there because he was under threat from those leaders he had antagonized. And his disciples were afraid. They knew what could happen, but Jesus was certain of what he needed to do. And we see here Thomas, the one who's gotten labeled the doubter, was the one who bravely said, okay, let's just go with him. And if we die with him, we'll die with him. So they went to Bethany, as Jesus said, for the glory of God. In John's gospel, I've learned in some of my reading that the glory of God, or Jesus' glorification, always refer to his dying. Interesting. So Jesus went to this friend who had died and toward his own dying. And Martha comes out to meet him, overwhelmed with grief, wishing, saying, if only you had been here, he wouldn't have died. You could have healed him. And then Jesus replies with those words so often read at funerals, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Now, I know there are a number of us here who aren't at all sure what to think about resurrection. We use our modern scientific understandings and may find ourselves skeptical. Some of you, maybe you're absolutely sure that it couldn't really happen, not literally. Maybe you have some alternate explanation of what happened in this story. Maybe you read John's gospel as a collection of writings that are not literally factually true. Maybe we believe in resurrection, both Lazarus' resurrection and Jesus' resurrection, as all being metaphorical. My answer would be, yes, they are metaphorical, and they are much more than metaphorical. Reggie asked me to preach what I believe. I believe in the resurrection. Even though I struggle to put into words to any of you what that means, because we're talking about mystery here. You all know that I don't impose what I believe on you. We practice Baptist freedom of soul and interpretation. We have a wide range of understandings, and that is a wonderful and rich part of who we are. We all have the freedom and the responsibility to be on our spiritual path, to seek the truth that leads us toward greater love and life in God. And when it comes to dying and whatever is beyond death, we are in the realm of mystery. We stand here in our bodies, limited to this earth, limited to what our bodies can experience, what our minds can comprehend, what our hearts can perceive. Most, I think, many at least, people in our American culture believe in some kind of life beyond death, although what that means seems to be a wide range of possibilities. Even within the Christian tradition, there's a pretty wide range of notions about what that means, although some people would say there's only one Christian view. Don't go there. Origen believed in reincarnation. That's third century patristic father. We do not know. We cannot know what is beyond this realm. So we speculate. We theologize. No one knows for sure. I always remember my conversation with Doris Corson. She was a member of my church in Rochester. She was in her 80s. Her husband, Elmer, had died a couple years before, and now she was on hospice at Sunset House, one of those lovely little hospice homes they have around Rochester with two or three beds, staffed by volunteers. We chatted a few minutes about how she was doing, about what great care she was getting from the volunteers, about how her family was dealing with her hospice diagnosis. And then she paused and looked at me with searching eyes and said softly, "I just wish I could know what it's going to be like." She wanted to know what was coming, what the dying would be like, and what was beyond the dying. That's the question, isn't it? A question that can bring great anxiety and fear, or hope. What will it be like? Many of us here have been close by someone who was dying. We've had people we love die. We have our own memories, our stories of what those experiences were like. But none of us here have done it. None of us have actually gone through it. None of us have been to what the other side, whatever that is, that means. We read and hear about near-death experiences. I found a Time magazine article from a few years ago that at least 8 million Americans claim to have had a near-death experience. And frequently, those who are dying see or hear, perceive in some way the presence of those who have already died that they loved. My mother said my father showed up to her and said, "You're going to like it here. It's really peaceful." So we have these hints. We get these glimpses in those liminal moments, in those thin places between life and death, when life and death are so close together. But it's a mystery. And standing on the edge of the ultimate unknown, how do we respond? Years ago, I was a hospice social worker for a couple years. And I partly took the job because I realized I was afraid of death and dying. And I didn't know much about it. And I kind of decided I wanted to learn a little more. I wanted to see what I could find out. One of the things I learned from the folks who had been doing hospice work a long time and from my patients is that most people die pretty much as they have lived. A few people have the time and the readiness to go through some great transformative spiritual process. But what I observed was that for most people, their dying is a distillation of who they've been all along. So I think the spiritual preparation for dying is the spiritual work of living. I said to Doris that day that we cannot know what it is like, but what I believe is that the love and goodness that we have known in our lives will still be there, and so much more of that. God, the source of life, love, whatever you choose to call that great creative energy that made us, that gives us life, the one who brought us into being and has held us and guided us every day, every breath, surely will not abandon us in our dying. Our bodies, we know, need to go back to the earth. We are creatures. But I believe that there is some essence in each of us that will still be and will always be forever held in that great love. The work of our lives is learning to know and live in that love. Learning to live more honestly, without illusions about who we are and what we are. Finding the courage and the trust to embrace the fact that, yes, we are creatures. There's a lot of good ways to do that. Everything from noticing the little bulbs poking up through the snow and mud, gardening, planting seeds, composting. That's a good way to get in touch with the fact that things have to die and break down, isn't it? Having pets who die long before we do. Learning to celebrate our bodies just as they are, not like anybody else's, and embracing, yes, folks, embracing our aging. Believing that who we are is good, created in love, made for love and creativity and goodness, and learning to live more in the moment. The desert mothers and fathers and later monastics believed it was important, useful, to keep the reality of physical death in their awareness. Surely something that was much more true for everybody in that day than in our culture, where we've managed to sanitize and professionalize dying to the point that many people, like me when I started that hospice job, know almost nothing about what it's like. Those monastics thought that the contemplation of death put everything else in perspective. It highlighted the ephemeral nature of life. It brought into focus the brevity of time, infused a sense of urgency into their work with God. Saint Benedict believed a regular practice of remembering death was a great spur toward faithfulness. Many spiritual traditions, certainly the Christian one, teach us that the spiritual work of our lives is learning to die before we die. Jesus said, "If anyone would come after me, they must take up their cross and follow me. Whoever would save their life will lose it. Whoever will lose their life for my sake and the gospel will find it." Or in the words of Baptist songwriter Ken Miedema, "Finding leads to losing, losing lets you find. Living leads to dying. Life leaves death behind. Losing leads to finding. That's all that I can say. No one will find life another way." Letting go. Accepting and even celebrating that we are not in control, however we might like to pretend we are. Being open and receptive to the many ways life keeps trying to teach us to trust, to surrender, to let our egos go, to give our lives away. Another one of my favorite funeral stories, dying stories. One of my other saints at my church in Rochester was a woman named Jean Bartlett. Some of you may know her husband, Dr. Jean Bartlett, was a well-known Baptist preacher and president of seminary. I never knew him, but I knew Jean, and she was a saint. And when Jean died, her children shared with me something that she had found very meaningful in the late last months of her life. It was something written about the trapeze artist. Some of you may have heard me tell this. When the trapeze artist, there's a flyer and there's a catcher, right? The catcher has to have strong arms, and they drop down and they swing back and forth and back and forth, and the flyer over here then grabs the trapeze and flies back and forth. And when the catcher calls out, the flyer's job is to let go and stick out their arms and be caught. If the flyer tries to grab the catcher's hands, they will fall. It doesn't work. The flyer has to let themselves fall into the catcher's hands and be caught. Wow. Dying is about flying, right? It's about letting go. It is about believing that we will be caught. Don't be afraid. Over and over, scriptures tell us, don't be afraid. Very truly I tell you, said Jesus, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a grain alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. It's happening all around us right now. Bulbs and seeds that have died, stirring to new life. Let us go into this liminal time, this almost spring, still winter time, and embrace the truth that is all around us. Let go. Let God. Trust the process. Trust in the life and love that is the source and the goal of all of who we are. In life, in death, in life beyond death, we are never alone. Thanks be to God. Amen.